Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. This is Acadiana's number one sports station. 1037 The Game. Streaming live on 1037thegame.com and on the 1037 The Game mobile app. It's game day, and we're going behind the glass with the famous CD.
I don't know how to put this, but kind of a big deal.
The new guy, Blaine Viator. Cody Schutz. It's the producers on 1037 The Game.
Hey, I heard you missed us. We're back.
Bases loaded. Two out. 2-2 pitch. Off speed. Again. Hit high and deep to right field. Tinglestad will watch it go. A grand slam for Antoine Duplantis. And the Tigers take control here in the bottom of the eighth inning. Second home run of the night for Antoine Duplantis. Make it 12-7 LSU.
Welcome, everyone, to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com, the must-listen-to Saturday morning sports talk show in Acadiana, live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, and it is a beautiful day in Acadiana, and it's Acadiana's number one sports station. We got a lot of ground to cover because college baseball's back in our lives. Dell Demps got fired, and hey, LSU basketball still doing pretty good.
It's baseball season, man. It's crazy that it's finally here. It's crazy that we finally got rid of Dell Demps, and LSU hoops are on fire. You kind of hit the nail on the head. We're going to touch on all that today and even more. A lot of fun on this Saturday morning.
To quote him, Drake and Future, what a time to be alive right about now. We got LSU baseball getting off to a hot start. Just played that grand slam clip from Twani, man. We talk about it. He's one of the best hitters in LSU history, without a doubt. Sure, the rankings don't show that, but the dude is an absolute stud at the plate. I can't wait to see what he does in the bigs. But what we saw last night was just a sign of things to come. The guy, I think, is, 82 hits away from the all-time hits leader in LSU program history. Well, and he had two bombs.
He not only has an opportunity to be the all-time LSU hits leader, but the all-time SEC hits leader before the season ends. He's such a great contact hitter. Keeps his bat in the, you know, down on a plane for so long through the strike zone. But the pop that he showed last night is not something we've seen.
Oh no,
that,
I guess
Antoine Duplantis in his, you know, first 3 years at Baton Rouge, he hit two home runs in each one of those seasons. What he does for his senior season premiere, he goes yard twice, including a grand slam.
Dude was just an absolute stud like last night, and we're talking about him, but what about Daniel Cabrera? The guy was just all over the place. I think it was, five RBIs, two home runs, and a couple really decent plays, including a phenomenal web gem that I don't think wound up being on the Mothership's top 10,
number
and I'm
seven.
Disappointed.
Number
it was number seven?
Number seven.
I didn't stay up long enough to watch them the top 10 plays.
I mean, he absolutely went down and got that ball and threw an absolute hose, a strike to first base, where freshman Bianco just snared it in for a double play that got LSU out a bit of a jam and really had all the momentum going its way at that point in the game.
Dude, that was just such a fun game. And then, of course, we had the Louisiana Raging Cajuns get things started last night. Gunnar Lazy, the first time in over 600 days he had thrown a pitch in a college baseball game, and the dude looked really, really good in that first game back. I like what I saw from the Cajuns to start off the season. Mind you, it was a losing effort, 3-1, largely because one hit just managed to land right at the perfect spot as the player was trying to make a diving catch. It just wasn't their night. Let me put it that way. It was rough to watch.
Yeah, but I mean, Gunnar Leger's back, right?
He
was hitting his spots. He had a lot of control. His velocity was actually up a little bit.
Depending on who you talk to.
I think he's a guy that you're going to be able to rely on. He's the same guy that you had before the injury. And he's good for him to bounce back and show a lot of confidence in himself. And in turn, Robichaud will show confidence in him as well.
I think that's the biggest thing. I know Robichaud has a lot of confidence in him. I think it was just a confidence boost for him to be out there and be able to pitch a full five innings and throw about 77 pitches. 50 of those were strikes.
anytime you can pound the strike zone like that, it's going to help out a ton. And the thing that he does is he never leaves the ball over the heart of the plate. You know, he always hits those corners and stays around the gray, and that's going to let you pitch for a very long time.
That's the biggest thing, man. It's fun to kind of talk about all that. If you want to call us up, 337-706-0111. The ARCO Equipment Hotline open up for the first half hour of the show. We got guests galore coming up at 10:30. We're going to have Vinny Servino of PerfectGame.org kind of talk some college baseball at large. He's definitely dove into a lot more of the previews concerning the Sun Belt and the SEC. So, hey, why not get a guy like that that was able to write up some really decent previews for PerfectGame.org? Try getting somebody else on. Didn't necessarily get back to me on it. It is what it is. I think we've got a plan B in place for that going forward. At 11:15, we got to talk about the Pelicans. And how can we not talk about it with one of the guys who's been covering like an absolute beast for The Athletic? That's our boy Will Guillory. Going to get him aboard at 11:15. And then 11:30, he used to be at 10:30, but we moved him around. He has a scheduling conflict, so let's just call it that. Greg Peterson, our college hoops guy, we're keeping him on. And maybe we'll get him to do a Jerry Palm almost and give us his top 16 seeds heading into the weekend.
Well, I mean, we're right in the thick of things heading into March Madness. It's going to be interesting to see how conference play closes out and conference tournaments start. A lot of teams have some wiggle room as far as seeding goes. So a lot of meaningful basketball games still to be played.
A lot of really meaningful games. I think there's a lot of big ones, especially in the SEC tonight. We've got Tennessee, Kentucky. Next week, the big one, El Grande, LSU, Tennessee. This one means a whole hell of a lot. Like, imagine if you have Tennessee, still the number one ranked team in the country, if they beat Kentucky tonight. And it seems feasible, right? And then you have LSU beat Georgia and Florida. Both those games seem like a feasible win, considering the fact that this is an LSU team that isn't like a Johnny Jones coach team in the past. I absolutely love what I've seen from LSU the last few games. They definitely have that grittiness that I think Will Wade talks about all the time. But I feel like they're a team that just needs to show that they're not going to be living and dying, living on the tightrope. Because I know Coach Will Wade talked about a couple weeks ago after the Arkansas loss was that they were walking the tightrope for such a long time. They were going to fall off sooner or later. I'd rather them try and win games and win them competitively than kind of be dealing with this whole, oh, hey, we're going to try and win however we can. And I'd want to see him win convincingly. And I want to see him win convincingly tonight.
Well, I think this is a team that just faces adversity so well. You know, they don't mind getting down. They don't freak out or get, you know, play out of control.
They block out the noise.
Yeah, they stay composed. Block out the noise. They play poised. And Will Wade really has them playing at a high level. Another thing that you got to love is it's a number of guys that can step up for this LSU team. It's not just a one-trick pony like they were, you know, years before. This is a team that can rely on multiple guys to get the job done for them.
That's the biggest thing. You need to have these guys get things done for them. When you look at LSU, I want to see LSU basketball do some big things. They got a potential chance to do something special, something they haven't done in a long time. And I'll say this. Beginning of the year, I thought you'd have to wind up winning at least one or two games in the SEC tournament to kind of lock things down. Right now, I don't think you're locking it down. I don't think you need to lock down anything. You are good to go.
Oh, not only are you good to go, you're playing for seeding at this point. I think this LSU team could get as high as a 3 seed, and I think they're probably locked close to maybe a 6 or 7 seed, depending on how everything falls out. But look, if everything falls their way, they don't necessarily have to beat Tennessee next week if they're competitive in that ball game and they win the games they should win. Look, you can never just toss out W's when you got to go on the road like they will have to do today against Georgia and again in a couple games. You can't just throw out wins on the road, but if they could get the job done like they should, be competitive with Tennessee, and win a game or two in the SEC tournament, I really think this is a team that could get as high as a 3 seed, but I think they're probably leaning on most likely a 4 seed at this point.
Well, that's kind of where they're pegged at right now, is a 4 seed. And for those who are listening on the mobile app, presented by Visit Avery Island, we had some technical difficulties. We're on the mobile app right now, so hey, make sure to download that app when you get a chance. It's absolutely positively free, so seriously, what are you waiting for?
Yeah, the app's great. You could always go back and listen to stuff on demand if you couldn't able to catch it live. It's something I use almost daily.
And I know you probably definitely use it on Mondays with the Weekly Reboot podcast. Two episodes in, and that is some fantastic stuff.
No, it really gets your week jump started. Ben does a good job just kind of recapping where everything is going into the week and gets you ready for the week. It's good for morning drive or after Dave's show or after
or during Dave's show.
You could pump it in, and you know you always got local stuff right at your fingertips.
You got local flavor in here, and you, of course, listen to this show on demand through the podcast, the mobile app, and also the podcast feed that we have. If you have iTunes or whatever podcast gimme that you have, listen to us on demand. Like I said, we got a lot of things to talk about today. We're going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break. Be back with more. You're listening to The Producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Welcome back to The Producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Today, guess what? Every Saturday morning, we put up a poll question, didn't bring it up in the first segment, but it feels like a good time to bring it up right now, and that is, do the Pelicans leave New Orleans in the next 5 years? We talked about it a lot in detail on last Saturday's show, but we decided to carry it over and spin it in a different direction. Instead of just do the Pelicans just straight up leave New Orleans, but it's more, I talked about it last week, about a five-year plan that needs to be in place from this point onward with Gale Benson and the rest of the Pelicans organization is to kind of set things up to try and succeed. And if you can't succeed within 5 years, I'd say then you can pack it in and go home. So my question to everybody on Twitter, at 103.7 The Game, do the Pelicans leave New Orleans in the next 5 years? And surprisingly, right now, 67% say no.
I'm going to actually lean yes. I know I was pretty vocal about that last week. There's an opportunity we're going to see now that Demps is gone, what direction this organization goes. But, I mean, if you couldn't get folks to buy in and you couldn't win with a marquee guy like AD, it's hard for me to see, you know, the city really rallying around, you know, another superstar.
And that's the biggest thing is, like, you need to have a whole bunch of people rally behind this organization, and it feels like this organization doesn't have a whole lot to rally around at this point in time because of the fact that Anthony Davis, he's going to be out the door. The ownership feels like it's, as Alvin Gentry put it best, a dumpster fire. The whole situation over the last month has been a dumpster fire, and I'd have to agree with him between that, the NBA possibly fining the Pelicans $100,000 a game if ADs seem to be healthy. And then AD walking out of the Pelicans game on Thursday night.
AD getting hurt, you know, and then just leaving the arena.
You're seeing this. Wasn't it on TV? Wasn't it on the broadcast?
Yeah, sure.
That's the most, like, damning thing of it all is literally he's walking out and you're seeing the video on national television. If it was, like, just on Twitter, you'd be like, who the hell leaked this out? And you're going to try and figure out who did it and fire them? But that's the biggest thing. It's like, who leaked that video? That would have been if it was on social media, but it's on all other forms of media, and that's amazing.
Well, if it's not a Pelicans, it's not somebody that works for the organization. They probably got a raise. I mean, it was.
Was it on Fox Sports or was it on TNT? I can't remember.
I think the game was on TNT.
Yeah, that's TNT, and they deserve. They're getting a little money thrown their way.
I mean. It's such a bad look, though, when your star player who's already on the way out. It just shows how he's quit on this team, and guys aren't rallying around to play with him. The Pelicans are actually playing better with him not in the lineup right now because guys just do not want to play with a guy like that. He's toxic to the locker room, to the guys on the bench. They play harder and have more fun when he's out of the ballgame.
I think that's the biggest thing. You need to have this franchise kind of buy in a little bit more into themselves as being a viable franchise. And I think we're going to start seeing things be built up a certain way. I know the rumor and innuendo is possibly the Boston Celtics and Jason Tatum wants to kind of come over to New Orleans. And that could be a decent guy to kind of build that franchise around for a couple of years.
It's a piece, though, right? He's not the piece.
No. He's not the piece, but he's a solid piece to help build around and try and get other pieces to at least be a contender. Trust me, the pieces, they're very much damn near impossible to get. That's the biggest thing.
Because the pieces that we're talking about here are probably Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson,
probably, what, 10
Iggy.
Or 12 of them, right?
Exactly. There's only 10 or 12 true the pieces. Like, T-H-E, all caps, bold, italicized, underline. That's the biggest thing. But there's guys that you can build a franchise around to be at least a contender. Because I feel like that's the biggest thing. If you can be in that conversation of being a top eight team in the Western Conference, that winds up looming pretty nicely as a compared to, oh, hey, 1 year you're a lottery team, then the next year you're trading pieces left and right to try and make a playoff run, and then you don't make a playoff run, or you get bounced out in the first round by the Warriors because you're an eight seed and you're barely in there. I think if you're able to build this team up and be a consistent 5-6 seed for a few years, then you start looking like a more viable destination. But the biggest thing is, who's going to be your GM?
Time? Do you have that much time?
Too? I think Gail Benson is going to give him that much time because she wants this team to succeed just as much as anybody else who's a fan of professional basketball in the city of New Orleans and in Louisiana in general. Because you get rid of that, it feels like yes, the state of Louisiana, it's not a basketball state by any means, but I feel like it could be. We see what's happened with LSU right now. They're playing extremely well. Cages the last few years haven't played extremely well. The attendance doesn't show that much. But I think if you can get a professional franchise like the Pelicans and at least make them contenders in a very tough Western Conference at this point in time, because, of course, the Golden State Warriors and potentially the Lakers, they're the gatekeepers right now of the NBA.
Just like the Lakers, under 500. Lakers?
Hey, you know, you never know, dude. You know, it could be worse. You could be the 12th-ranked team in the Western Conference, and that's the Pelicans right now.
Well, what happens after the All-Star break? I mean, we're going to have to deal with this all the way through lottery and...
Oh, no. Up until you see the bouncing balls, that's when this thing kind of is going to wind up, like, wrapping up.
How much basketball does AD play for the Pelicans?
It's something that shoulder contusion is what they're calling it. What happens there?
Well, let's put him on the shelf for a while, right?
No, it's all about, like, exactly. You can actually have a valid reason to put him on the shelf for an extended period of time. Because what is it, like 20-something games left in the year?
Yeah.
I think that'd be...
Send him for 12 and then figure it out from there, right?
Nah, I'd send him for as long as you can.
Yeah.
As long as you possibly can to say, hey, he's still not 100%. He's still not 100%. And put a gag order on Rich Paul, bottom line. Just have him... put him in the shadow realm for all I care. Because Rich Paul, the second he starts talking, it's going to wind up being a bad situation for the Pelicans and also the NBA in general. Because it's a mess right now.
Do you think they should have just took the deal from the Lakers?
No. Hell no.
I agree with you on that.
No, that's the biggest thing about the
Knew he was going to get fired, and he still didn't take the deal, right?
Well, no. I think he was going to get fired at the end of the year. So it's like it didn't matter.
He was getting fired. He could have took the deal and said, hey, you
know. Nah, because I feel like.
Screw you, Nola.
You say that, but I just don't think he works that way. I don't think he's wired that way. I wouldn't want to be wired that way because that just makes you look like a bag, honestly. As a person who's never burned a bridge once in his life, it just feels like that's burning bridges, and I don't want to see him do that. Because you can about imagine if he wants to get another job, not necessarily as a GM, but as a guy who's still in the front office, not necessarily making all the decisions in the world, but wants to learn how to be a better person.
But is it Dempsey's fault?
I'd say a good chunk of it is, but then again, like it's the fact he went through the Chris Paul era and the Anthony Davis era, and that's a big thing. And now you've lost both of those guys, both some really good talents, some really good pieces that could have wanted to make it a decent run in the Western Conference at that time, which really wasn't that deep when you think about it. The Western Conference wasn't like a dominant conference like it is now, where you're seeing the Golden State Warriors just win it every single year. And some teams at least making it interesting, like the Oklahoma City Thunder a few years ago, but now it's just Russell Westbrook and everybody else.
I mean, you could say Houston Rockets with James Harden having the offensive
Call me when he wins the Western Conference final, because it's great what he's doing, like the 30-point streak. Is it still going on?
I'm not sure.
It's amazing to watch. It's amazing. It's like watching, like, if you were around when Joe DiMaggio had his unprecedented hitting streak.
Man, come on, Clint. I'm old, but
I'm just saying.
I went around with like if
some of our listeners were around, you know, that's my biggest thing. If some of our listeners were around or know the stories about these hitting streaks – in baseball. I feel like that's still impressive, but guess what? You know, nobody's going to necessarily remember it. People are going to remember the championships. I know we had Ken on a while back over the summer say that championships are what's going to matter when it comes to your legacy, and I have to agree with him, especially when you look at what this guy has done over the last few years. It's been great to see him put up all these numbers, but it hasn't translated to the postseason, and that's the biggest thing. He needs to translate that to the postseason results to be able to say, hey, I had one hell of a career. I'm not going to go to super team. I'm going to try and develop one in the city of Houston. I think that could be huge if he can get something going this year in this postseason to at least make it interesting and try and make it to the Western Conference Finals and try and get past the big bad Golden State Warriors, which feels like it's easier said than done now with the way they've been playing in this last, like, 10, 20 games.
For what it's worth, he went for 42 on Wednesday night, so the streak is still intact. But he's having just a great season. His efficiency scoring the basketball. I know I'm always very critical of him about him putting up so many shots and being a volume shooter. He's being very efficient scoring the basketball, and he's also having a ton of assists. He's averaging, what, 8 assists a game, so he's getting his teammates involved as well.
All right, we got to go to the ARCO Equipment Hotline real quick before we take a commercial break, and that's our guy T. He's on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. What's going on, good brother?
T, it's been a minute, man.
Hey, how y'all doing, guys?
Doing good, doing good. What's up with you, brother?
Hey, not too much. Look, I think Russell Westbrook's record is a lot more amazing than Harden. I mean, if you let me shoot 50 times, I'm going to score 30 points, I guarantee.
Yeah. but that's so, really not the case this year, T. He's in the top three as far as efficiency of scoring the basketball this year.
Don't get me wrong. The guy can play. I understand that. But to get a triple-double 9, 10, 11 times in a row, whatever, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, Blaine. Did you go to the LSU game last night?
No, baseball? I didn't go. I watched it at home.
You watched it at home?
Yes, sir.
I listened to it on the radio. What did you think?
I mean, look, I'm not going to have a knee-jerk reaction too much to what Zach Hess did. If you remember last year, he gave up 8 runs and only registered 7 outs against Notre Dame in his season opener. He got much better as the season progressed. But last night, he didn't have his secondary pitches working. The velocity was still way up there, so the tools are there. What I saw from Eric Walker was really encouraging. I mean, he was probably only sitting around 88, 89, but he's hitting all his spots. He's a guy that they're going to need to rely on heavily. But I liked a lot what I saw from Big Cole Henry, the freshman from Alabama, came in. He was sitting at 96 almost the entire time out on the mound. They swung the bats really well. I like to see him get a little bit more offensive production for some other guys outside of Duplantis and Cabrera. But, I mean, it's a long season. I think it's a lot of promise for the Tigers.
I got you. Chris Blair does a great job on the radio, by the way.
Oh, he does. He's fantastic.
Yeah, he doesn't complain about the length of a game going like 5 hours.
No.
You could have complained a lot last night for sure.
Hey, love y'all show, man. Y'all have a good day.
And
tell Cody, congrats.
Yes, sir.
I'll definitely do that because I'll actually be heading over there later on today. Because, man, it's Cody's wedding. What wedding? We're going to take a quick commercial break. Come back with more. You're listening to the producers on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Coming up next, we'll have our guy Vinny Servino on of Perfect Game to talk some college baseball after day one.
Now, returning to the only show bringing you weekly appearances from the Coach Foe. Clint may have to step out when he gets here. They really don't like each other. It's the producers on 103.7 The Game.
Here are the thrill seekers, corrupt and immoral.
Men's basketball, as Doug mentioned, big game.
Welcome back to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Live from the 237 Roof Studios. And guess what? We got to talk some college baseball here on Acadiana Sports Station. And to do that, we're going to go to the ARCO Equipment Hotline to talk with Vinny Servino of PerfectGame.org. What's going on, man?
Hey, how's it going, man? Doing well.
It is going fantastic because, after all, baseball season has officially begun, and it was a really interesting one last night, especially when you look at some of the games around the country, including UConn beating Louisville 3-2. That was a little strange one last night.
Yeah, you know, especially because of the fact that UConn ace Mason Fioli was out and did not pitch this game. But, you know, the offense was able to generate just enough runs to beat out Louisville starter Reed Detmers, which is definitely a surprise earlier in the season.
Exactly. A couple other surprises, a couple notable things. And, of course, we got to talk about the LSU game last night. 12-7 beating UL Monroe after being down early. Zach Hess didn't necessarily have his stuff in that first inning. Maybe it was a little too much adrenaline, the season opener. Maybe it was just a rough start for him, but then he bounced back, had a solid outing overall. And then you wound up having a big performance offensively from Daniel Cabrera and Antoine Duplantis. What can you say about this LSU team and what they've been able to do at this point in time?
Well, you know, over a perfect game, we have LSU ranked as the number one team in the country for a reason. You know, you mentioned Zach Hess didn't have the greatest start in the world, but that's okay because we expect, and Louisiana State expects him to figure that out as the season continues to go on. But, man, that offense really doesn't stop. When you look at Antoine Duplantis and Daniel Cabrera, what they did last night, you know, Cabrera hitting two home runs, Duplantis with a late grand slam, put them on top. And then you look at the fact that they have Zach Watson, Josh Smith coming back from a year ago, Brant Boussard and Hal Hughes each have starting experience under their belt. And then, you know, you have guys like Saul Garza, who's going to be an impact junior college transfer. And really, one through nine in the lineup does not let up.
I mean, the offense was spectacular last night, but one of the big stories for me, at least, is the comeback of Eric Walker, bouncing back from the injury, missed the entire season last year, was pretty solid in his return last night.
Yeah, that was really good to see, you know, and frankly, I think it was good to see him on opening day, too, in front of that packed crowd over at the box, and, you know, just to kind of show Walker the support that he has from the fans. And, you know, he was a very good pitcher when he was healthy, and so he's fully being expected to come back to that role again in this year. The pitching depth is really something that is going to stand out this year about LSU. You saw a little bit with some of the freshmen last night, like Cole Henry, who should be interesting, has a role to play, but then all I can say is LSU fans are probably going to like Landon Marcel a lot once he gets rolling.
Yeah, that's the next question I had for you. There's been lofty expectations for Landon. He's coming in the season. People are talking about he has the poise of an Aaron Nola, has the movement of stuff of an Alex Lang. How do you see Landon Marceau's time in purple and gold?
I think he's going to be a very successful college pitcher. You know, I scouted him in high school. He was one of the most polished prep pitchers that I had seen. There were some rumors about him potentially transferring in early, early enrolling, but he ended up finishing out his high school year, and now he's in Louisiana State, and, you know, he's going to throw 90-92. He'll probably touch a 3 or 4, but just really good command, has a plus curveball, has a plus changeup, and he can really just throw those both for any count, strikes, swings and misses, whatever he wants to, really. So and obviously the LSU staff really enjoys him, too. They're going to have him start on Saturday to open the year. So I think he could be a special, special player for LSU.
Talk right now with Vinny Servino of PerfectGame.org. And, of course, we got to talk about one of the more interesting games coming out of the first day, and that is the Florida State Seminoles getting a combined no-hitter to start the season off against Maine. Again, it's expected you're going to have Florida State beat Maine, but a no-hitter, that's impressive.
Yeah, you know, it's a really nice way to kick off 11's final season over there in Tallahassee. When you look at a guy like Drew Parrish, especially after what he went through at the end of last season, it's really good to see him bounce back, come out, look sharp, and, you know, through 65 pitches in the start. And then to have Connor Brady and Chase Haney finish it off, combined no-hitter. It's a really nice omen, I think, for the start of the season in Tallahassee. Those fans are probably at least hoping, if not expecting, to win a national title in 11's final year.
And then you talk about somebody stepping down, Mike Martin, at the end of the season. Some news came out yesterday about Mark Scalf from UNC Wilmington stepping down. A lot of people are talking about him being one of those class acts in college baseball. What can you say about him and the legacy that he's going to leave behind at UNC Wilmington?
To be honest with you, no, I didn't see that news yesterday, but it's certainly interesting. Why did he step down?
Yeah, Mark Scalf, he's going to the head coach for UNC Wilmington. He's going to be stepping down after the end of the season. He'll be retiring.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I might have misheard you there.
Okay.
But, yeah, you know, he's another guy who's one of the legends of the sport. And, you know, you don't really see that a lot too often, these guys staying in this one place and building up the program and being established guys. And you look at him and you look at Mike Martin, and they're really just leaving behind impressive resumes, I think, when you look at it.
Talking right now with Vinny Servino, and man, what a game last night for the Texas Longhorns. You had Bryce Elder look phenomenal through eight innings, and then kind of didn't allow a hit to start off the ninth inning, got pulled. But Bryce Elder just looked outstanding last night to start off the season against the Louisiana Raging Cajuns in a 3-1 win in extra innings.
Yeah, you know, Bryce Elder really showed out in a big way, I think, on a big stage, too. Because, you know, he's going against the Raging Cajuns, who are a very good team and a very good program over the past few years. And they had the return of, ace Gunnar Leger. And so, you know, they were amped up and they were trying to win the game as well. But just a really strong performance there. And Texas is one of those teams for us that was just on the cusp. You know, they went to the College World Series last year. They were a really strong team. And we're probably expecting big things out of them again in 2019. So they should be fun to watch.
Outside of that, we got to look around the SEC, some interesting matchups. Of course, you had Vanderbilt just blow out Virginia out the water, the number one ranked team in a lot of preseason polls. Mind you, not y'all, as y'all mentioned, LSU's number one. We appreciate that. But 15-9 last night, Vanderbilt gets the win over Virginia. What can you say about the Commodores, and what are you expecting of them in 2019?
You know, Vanderbilt's absolutely in the hunt for a national championship again. I know we had LSU at number one, but, you know, Vanderbilt was at number three for us. Vanderbilt is the number one team for a number of different other polls, so they're clearly a talented team. I was actually at that game for a couple of innings last night. None of the pitchers really looked like they had their best stuff, but the thing was, Vanderbilt's lineup's going to be very deep. You know, they had Austin Martin get on base six times, who could be in store for a breakout year. J.J. Bleday is one of the best college hitters in the country, and he showed it last night. And then you have depth throughout the lineup, whether it's Pat DeMarco, Phillip Clark, or anybody else, really, even some of the seniors, and Julian Infante and Steven Scott. So they are definitely one of the deepest units in the country, and they should be competing for that SEC title along with, you know, almost everybody else.
A couple more questions here with Vinny Servino of PerfectGame.org, and a couple interesting matchups opening day again. UCLA had to rally against St. John's in a 3-2 win. This is fifth-ranked UCLA we're talking about. Is that a sign of things to come, or is this just opening day jitters?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, UCLA was down their opening day starter, Ryan Garcia. And the St. John's is a really good team. You know, they often get overlooked there in the Northeast, but especially pitching-wise, they have a lot of talented arms this year, especially those who are draft eligible. So I think it might have just been an opening day jitters type of situation, because we're going to be expecting UCLA's offense to put up a lot more than three runs a game, because they do have the talent and the depth throughout the lineup, whereas the pitching staff is almost going to be a little bit more questions. But, you know, Zach Pettway looks really good on the mound, and so that's got to be encouraging for the Bruins.
You know, looking at a national perspective, a couple more questions here on the national perspective, is which conference do you think is going to be the toughest to kind of come out of and say, hey, this is going to be a conference that is going to be loaded once it comes to postseason play on the road to Omaha?
Oh, goodness. you know, the SEC obviously is one of the more talented conferences in baseball, and it always is. When you have number one LSU, number three Vanderbilt, and then you have, you know, Florida, Arkansas, who are impressive programs throughout. You just really look at the depth of the SEC, and it definitely stands out. While you also look at the ACC as well, between North Carolina, Louisville, North Carolina State, Florida State. Really, those two conferences jump to mind, and that's the cliched answer, but the ACC and the SEC are, once again, I think, head and shoulders above the rest of the country.
And kind of one more here. Who's your early prediction for the national champion of all of college baseball? I know you mentioned the boys over in Vanderbilt as being a potential contender, but who do you think is going to win the national title in your mind?
Well, actually, over at PerfectGame.org, we did our end of the preseason picks, and I actually went with the Florida Gators. They have been one of the more consistent programs in baseball, you know, going to Omaha the past 6 years, I think. And I think what's going to be the separator with the Gators is, compared to everybody else, is that even though they lost a lot of talent from last year, they also have one of the best freshman classes. And I think that, in combination with the pitching depth of Dice and Mace and Leftwich, is going to bode very well for Coach O'Sullivan and the Gators.
Vinny, thanks so much, my man, for coming on. We'll talk to you down the road.
I appreciate you, man.
All right, that was Vinny Servino. You can follow him on Twitter at VServino1037. VServinoPG. There we go.
Yeah, he touches on everything. If you need to know who's being scouted from a high school level all the way to the college level and who's doing big things in college baseball, he's the guy to follow. Perfect Game does a great job just covering all of college baseball as well as the MLB draft.
They really do. And again, I appreciate him for coming on. Kind of had to make some improvisations. Basically, we were going to have somebody else on. Never got back to me. It is what it is. Thankfully, we were able to get him on to talk a little bit more national perspective of college baseball. Always great to talk college baseball with anybody in general, but he was really, really good.
Yeah, we don't want to make too much, you know, knee-jerk reactions over last night, but some interesting games nonetheless.
Yeah.
When you saw some teams put up big runs, some teams struggling, it's going to be interesting to just kind of keep an eye on those to see if they remain trends or it's just opening night jitters.
And Tulane had a tough one as well. They wound up winning 3-2. It was a clutch game for them.
Yeah, who they went up against?
George Washington.
Okay.
It's some jabrons, but still. 3-2 to start the season up against
somebody that you haven't, you know, played. You haven't played a competitive game yet. You played these scrimmages that are very controlled, very situational, and then you got to go out there in front of the bright lights, in front of the fans. It's a totally different atmosphere.
Just phenomenal stuff all the way around when you look at what's going on around the state of Louisiana. Mind you, the Cajuns, I think they can wind up. I hope they get at least one out of the next two games because I think that shows progress.
Well, look, they competed last night.
They did.
Every step of the way, they had a chance to win that game.
Key hits couldn't pop.
These next two games, I mean, they could actually win both of them. You just don't know. They were able to hold Texas's bats down. Let's see if the Cajuns' bats can't open up a little bit this afternoon over at the Teague.
Exactly. It's going to be interesting, especially with the junior transfer. Bradford's going to get the start, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys in this UL pitching staff that we just don't know a whole lot about. You know, they might end up being dynamite. We just didn't have a whole lot on them going into the season. So far, so good after, you know, one game. I know they took the loss, giving up 3 runs in 10 innings to a power five school and a Big 12 team like Texas is nothing to, you know, shake.
No. I mean, like I said, this is a Texas team that's been in contention for quite some time. Definitely something you need to keep an eye on throughout the season. Hopefully they can kind of – that's the biggest thing. You need to get the bats to wake up because we know the pitching is phenomenal. We know how good that is. Daniel Freeman does a fantastic job with these guys. Just the hitting has been the biggest question for him for quite some time. We're going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break, come back. We'll do some buying. We'll do some selling. And we'll do a whole lot more talking on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Your Saturday morning never truly gets started until the producers take over the airwaves.
Like it or not?
Not.
We are taking over.
Now let's get back to Blaine, Clint, and Cody.
Welcome back to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. On this Saturday morning, it's a beautiful Saturday morning. College baseball, it's back in our lives. College basketball going on today as well. A lot of marquee matchups. Break that down with Greg Peterson at 11:30. Of course, we got a lot of other things to talk about. That's why we have something we like to call every single Saturday, a little buying and selling. And guess what? In honor of his wedding day, Cody Schutz, he made it into the studio.
Go. The producers, they back on their BS again. Best buying or selling on lit sports trends. Joey's rolling up the topics like Grant Daddy Pete. Sparking them up would be Blaine, Clint, and me. We'll pass the toppies to the left hand side. Buying or selling time. You know, this flow is over. Now get back to the show.
Cody, where you going? Where you going, man? You got to go get married? Okay, I'll see you later.
Hey, shout out to Cody, though, on the serious side, man. Congrats on that wedding, and best of luck to you and your future bride.
Exactly. Congrats to him, man. And, of course, we got to start things off with buying and selling. And that's talking about the big elephant in the room, and that is Dell Demps. He got Das Boot, and now Danny Ferry is the interim GM. Now the big question is, buy or sell? Is he going to be the GM going forward?
I'm going to sell, man. I really think they're going to try to go out and get somebody in this offseason. Once the season's over, they'll try to make a big splash. I just can't see them going that direction.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at as well here, because it feels like they're going to wind up going forward and try and get somebody really, really good to be that general manager for this franchise. If they want to be able to succeed, and we talked, the poll question involves the next 5 years. The five-year plan needs to be in place, and if you can't succeed, shut it down, move it to Seattle, Vegas, wherever the NBA wants you to go. I think you need to be able to say, hey, we want to be able to set us up for success then, now, and forever, and you need to get somebody that can do that. I think that's the biggest thing.
I mean, if Ms. Gail Benson needs somebody to, you know, operate the five-year plan, I think Clint Domingue would be excellent at that role.
But mind you, I don't know a whole hell of a lot about him, talent in the NBA and in these young talents in college basketball. Obviously, like, I'd say, hey, trade to the Cleveland Cavaliers, because that's where the conspiracy theory is. They're getting the number one pick. Get that. Go get Zion. Go get you a Zion. Maybe get some other pieces in free agency down the line and try and keep Drew Holiday around, because Drew Holiday probably is the best player they have left. That being said, though, moving over to the baseball diamond, the Astros recently announced Roberto Osuna is going to be the closer for them in 2019. You down with that?
I'm buying on that, man. I think Osuna was pitching very well at times last year. He has all his baggage behind him now. He'll be able to focus with a fresh start in Houston to start a year with a new organization.
Yeah.
I love Roberto Osuna brings from a pitching perspective at the mound. I don't know. I'm not with all the other the other BS that's not proven, though, right? So we live in a country that you're innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah, like
so it's not proven.
It's also
actually in Canada too, though.
Yeah, but also, like I said, it's just the fact that he's pushing. It's more just you down with the decision of him being the closer, more from just a baseball perspective. Because of course, there's always going to be the eyes judging, especially in the MLB. There's going to be the judgeful eyes just looking at that situation. The fact that when they traded for him, there was a lot of eyes.
I mean, you
eyes.
Go out and get a guy like that, and you go out and trade for somebody like that. You trade for him to be your closer. So, yes, I'm completely down with A.J. Hinch's decision for him to be the closer.
Next up on buying and selling, last weekend, AAF opening weekend, and it was definitely a little bit of a mixed bag. Obviously, the talent that the Memphis Express has, I'm jumping off that express right now.
Mets getting the start this week, so I'm
he better
back on.
He better, because Hackenbaum is an absolute joke of a quarterback. He does not deserve to be on that field. I don't know why they kept him in there the entire game. Get him out of here. But the buy or sell is more about, can this be a sustainable developmental league for the NFL?
I'm buying. I thought from what I watched, it was pretty entertaining. The talent level wasn't quite where, you know, obviously it's not where the NFL's at.
Oh, God, no.
It fills a void, right? It was entertaining football. It was It was competitive for most part. And it was interesting how they were very transparent with their rebounds.
I mean, the replay judge.
I enjoyed it. I think that it can be sustainable.
It was well done. It was well done. And last one here, of course, we got to talk about the big elephant in the room in terms of a national perspective in the NFL. And that's the former San Francisco 49ers quarterback. I'm just going to leave that name out of my mouth. But we all know what they're talking about with the collusion and whatnot, and the NFL giving him a significant payday. But my question is, does he play in the NFL again?
No, I don't think Colin Kaepernick ever plays in the NFL again. And I personally think it's strictly from a talent perspective at this point. I
mean, he's getting paid a ton of money.
He's 3 years removed from playing in the league.
Yeah.
So, if you hadn't played competitive football,
he's going to play in the XFL.
I just don't see him playing in the NFL yet.
Yeah, I think he's better off in the XFL 2020. Yeah, like I said, I just had to throw it out there, a little buy or sell about Colin Kaepernick. And that's all we're going to talk about that guy, okay? We're going to leave it at that conversation and move on. Because I just don't want to have the ARCO Equipment Hotline blow up with all these takes. Let's just talk about that. From is he going to play perspective, and that's it. We'll move on. Because, hey, there's a lot more to talk about. Of course, we can talk about everything involving the there's so much going on. You've got the college baseball getting started opening weekend. LSU looking really good to start off the season. Mind you, Zach Hess.
You know, most parts of the country, this is a down season, right? Downtime. But in the South, man, college baseball is just a different animal.
Well, like I said, add the fact that you have LSU doing really, really well, it makes this quote-unquote downtime a lot easier to book for, like, a show. You know what I'm saying? Like, if LSU was kind of like, I wouldn't have had Greg Peterson on every single week. I can guarantee you that. because I feel like it's just I don't want to talk about college basketball if both college basketball teams that we cover here are in the dumps. And also it helps that we have the dumpster fire, if you will.
I see that. But, I mean, MLB's right around the corner, too. Pitchers, yes. Catchers are reporting. Spring training's just
The rest of the roster is supposed to show up in the next couple of days, on Monday, I believe.
Let's get that.
So let's take a quick commercial break. Be back with more. You're listening to The Producers on 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, this is Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. Streaming live on 103.7thegame.com and on the 103.7 The Game mobile app. It's game day, and we're going behind the glass with the famous CD.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
The new guy, Blaine Viator. Cody Schutz. It's the Producers on 103.7 The Game.
Hey, I heard you missed us. We're back.
To tell you the truth, you know, this whole thing has been a dumpster fire, you know, and it's just hard. You know, for guys, you know, we want guys to be professional and we want them to do this, but it's hard for guys, you know, to go through what they've been through and to be able to come out and be the team of that quality. I'm happy for all the guys. I just thought that they did a great job.
Tell us how you really feel, Alvin Gentry, a dumpster fire. And this was Thursday before Tell Dimps got Das Boot. Danny Ferry, the interim GM, talked about during buying and selling. But, man, it makes sense to kind of get Danny Ferry there. But welcome back to hour number two of The Producers on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Far from a dumpster fire. And, hey, you can call us up at the ARCO Equipment Hotline in this segment. Outside of that, you're probably going to be out of luck. Because guess what? We've got at 11:15, Will Guillory of The Athletic talking New Orleans Pelicans. And then 11:30, our guy, Greg Peterson, will talk some college hoops ahead of this big Saturday.
Ton of big matchups on college basketball. I mean, highlighted.
Tennessee-Kentucky,
man, that's one that's going to get everybody's interest, even with Kentucky dropping the game to LSU.
You even got Iowa, Kansas State. Tennessee-Kentucky is a good one. LSU-Georgia is going to be a fun one, mind you. Tom Crean pretty much burying the entire team. Had you heard that?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, he literally was like, oh, hey, like I should have let these guys go when I took over the program at Georgia. Tom Crean just literally burying people, and it is amazing.
That Georgia team's kind of been one that's been different throughout the season, right? They'll play pretty well for a week or two, and then, man, they totally different team, you know? They got Michigan and Maryland that just got started right now. So you got some top 25 action basketball tipped off just a minute ago.
Yeah, you got them, what is this, Michigan and
Maryland.
Maryland, okay. Yeah, like I said, I had the TV facing the back of me, so I'm looking at a mirror, and I can't necessarily make it all out. Okay?
Michigan's the whole squad are wearing the pink shoes, kind of like Tremont Waters wears.
Well, yeah, this is their game for tip-off for cancer or something like that. Like, I guess. I mean, that would make sense, right?
Yeah. I mean, the whole team's wearing the Tremont Water pink shoes.
Yeah, but I think this is an actual gimmick they're doing as opposed to just Tremont Waters wearing pink shoes just because he can.
I mean, that guy's so...
Can we admit that he's probably the MVP of this team?
Oh, definitely. But it's – okay, against Kentucky, he didn't have his best game, but he was still able to control the pace of play, get other guys involved, and come up with a big bucket or two when they needed it. But he definitely didn't play, you know, one of his better games of the season. Just the way he controls the tempo for this team, though, is just amazing. And when you get guys like Emmett Williams or Biscuit Williams and other guys like that involved, and of course Naz Reid, who didn't have a good game against Kentucky, but coming off a 30-point performance a game prior, it's who's going to kill you tonight from this LSU squad?
I mean, I you can only imagine who's going to kill you from this LSU squad. It could be Emmett Williams. It could be Naz Reid. Naz Reid could have another big performance. Everybody's starting to put it all together.
Skylar Mays has played really good the last two ball games.
Cavell Bigby Williams, the guy who tipped it in, and is a great for once in their lives, Louisiana gets the call right. He gets the right call for a change, or right no call, if you will.
You know, one guy who didn't get a whole lot of love, he didn't even really start.
Will Wade?
Nah, man. I'm kidding. Javonte Smart. I mean, he comes off the bench.
He's been good.
Makes some big spots for him and creates offense for his teammates.
All right, we're going to hurry up and go to the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111, and we're going to flip the topic over to some Pels. What's going on, Bob?
Hey, let me ask you something, guys. I don't know how long y'all been following the NBA, but I have never seen a total screw job by the NBA on what they've done to the Pelicans. I mean, first, you know, this would have never happened if, you know, this involved L.A. or Boston, but it involved a small market team like the Pelicans. And, you know, for LeBron and the Lakers and to come out and say, oh, yeah, we want to have him and we'll do this and we'll do that. And we'll bring him on and we'll trade these players. And then, but, you know, but AD's agent fired the first shot.
Yeah.
That idiot. That pink suit wearing SOB. Okay? and then AD fired the second shot. Okay, he don't want to play here. So what does the NBA do? They screw the Pelicans. They say, oh, we're going to fine you $100,000 if you don't play him. And he's our only bargaining chip in this whole situation he wanted out of. You know, he put us in this kind of jail. And for the NBA and for, you know, LeBron and for, you know, AD's manager, screw them all. I mean, I'd sit AD the rest of the season. Wouldn't play him. I'd come up with creative things. Oh, he's got turf toe, something. But I wouldn't play him.
Load management.
Yeah, well, like I said, now that he has that shoulder injury, you could probably very well pull this off. But you're saying, Bob, about how you haven't seen anything like this. I feel like in terms of a regular season, I would agree with you. But at the same time, you could almost say the same thing about what happened with Chris Paul a few years, which seems like a long time ago, but not really. Because Chris Paul, he was supposed to go to the Lakers, and then the NBA kind of nixed that because they were the owners at the time of the Pelicans or then the Hornets. So you had that whole situation going on. It feels very similar to it because, again, it's your star player. They don't want to see them kind of not have their star player sitting because of the fact that it's considered tanking. And we know the Philadelphia 76ers were doing that for years, was tanking, but apparently now that the Sixers are good, we're not going to allow any more tanking like in this situation where you're just going to sit AD even though he's clearly healthy. I think that's just the NBA wanting to protect the value of the game. And I'm using air quotes here in the 237 Roof Studios because it's just frustrating to me kind of see where this Pelicans franchise has gone and where it could be headed.
Well, I mean, to me, the only bargaining chip right now, and I was kind of surprised that they let Dems go. I mean, not that I wanted him around, but yeah. I thought that he would hang on through the end of the season,
yeah,
you know, and then they would make the changes then. But he had to go. I mean, you know, I don't even know if I would let Gentry go. I mean, they're trying to run a Golden State offense, you know, with Brooklyn kind of players. I mean,
yeah.
it's ridiculous, you know, the way this franchise is thinking about the talent on their team or level of talent, you know. So, yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm just kind of frustrated. I got a friend of mine, and you know, we share four season tickets, and right now we're basically on the fence of whether we're going to stay with them. And you know, we've been season ticket holders, you know, since they came back after Katrina when they were the Hornets, you know, and basically we just fed up with the whole situation.
And you should be frustrated with the whole situation right now, Bob, because I feel like this is where we're at right now. When you look at the Pelicans, they're just waiting to kind of get rid of them. And we're talking with Dell Demps getting fired. I think a lot of that has to do with what happened during that Oklahoma City Thunder game when Anthony Davis went down with a shoulder injury towards the end of the halftime. And then wound up walking out of the stadium, walking out of the Smoothie King Center. Like, that, it's one thing to be out for the rest of the game and just stay in the locker room, kind of just get wrapped up and whatnot. But no, he left, like, right after the game wrapped, before the game wrapped up, before everything was all said and done, I guess, to beat traffic in New Orleans, I guess. But outside that, it's just like, we were just sitting there, like, we were
there's
just...
No, Clint, there's nobody in the Smoothie King.
That's the joke. That's the joke, Blaine. Like I said, you're just trying to beat the traffic to go to the airport to get the first flight out to get to Charlotte, North Carolina for the All-Star game. But to me, it feels like Anthony Davis has an out now to wind up just sitting the rest of the year. But apparently, according to reports that I've seen in the last hour or so, he still wants to play. Anthony Davis, what are you doing? What message are you trying to send here? Sit down, make that money, and go ahead and chill. He doesn't want to play.
So you're telling me he's going to play in the NBA All-Star game?
Well, I don't know about the All-Star game, but I think he wants to play the rest of the season out with the Pels. That's the weird part.
Yeah.
Does he want to play?
I'm wondering if
that was kind of any kind of incentive that was in his contract, that if he makes the All-Star team and he plays in the All-Star game, he gets a bump, you know, somehow like a bonus or something.
There probably is
that's pathetic.
It really is. Bob, I appreciate the call. We got to kind of try and wrap up this segment, a nice little bow. But, yeah, like I said, reports came out, I think it's about an hour ago, according to the mothership, I believe, put this out, was one, the fact that he very well could be playing like the rest of the year, according to reports. I'm trying to grab this out right now. Oh, and then I'm seeing this rumor, and I'm laughing at it. It's about your boy LeBron James, Blaine. A rumor going around that he's getting fat.
Bron's getting fat?
Yes, Bron is getting fat, according to rumors from Pro Basketball Talk. And I love their...
That's all we have to talk about during All-Star Week is LeBron getting fat.
It's the best thing ever.
Like, this is where we're at, right?
Yeah, this is where we're at. I mean, if this were the Jim Rome show, we'd just basically be talking about him being fat for an entire segment. I think that's the biggest thing. It's like everybody's talking about it. The rumor is, according to Pro Basketball Talk, this is about 2 hours ago, and the byline is Lakers in thick of playoff hunt. That's literally what we're talking about right now. And the rumor is LeBron James weighs 280 pounds. That's pretty fat. Due to missing 18 of 19 Lakers games with a groin injury that undermined his conditioning routine. So according to Brian Windhorst of the Four Letter Network.
So Brian needs to, you know, leave a little bit of those In-N-Out burgers alone.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Is that why he left Cleveland to go to California for the In-N-Out burgers? So he could be like a Dane Cook
animal
was at
style.
One point? Animal style, going animal style, all these, and he's 280 pounds, just fat, right before the end of the season, just being fat. I wish I had the fat alarm or the fat announcement like Alvin has, because it is just amazing. But like I said, he's just getting fat, and that's amazing. That's actually a talking point right now, and that's the last time I'm going to play that. Because we're going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break, flip it over to some Pelicans talk in general with our guy, Will Guillory of The Athletic. Talk about the Pels, the future, and where things could be headed. By the way, quick poll update. Still, 61% say the Pelicans aren't going to leave New Orleans in the next 5 years. Impressive. Going to take a quick commercial break and be back with more. You're listening to the producers on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
The producers are willing to break down all the rumor and innuendo to get your weekend kick-started. Chat them up at 337-706-0111. Now, back to Blaine, Clint, and Cody.
Welcome back to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Going to hurry on over to the Arco Equipment Hotline to talk to our guy, Will Guillory of The Athletic, to talk to some New Orleans Pelicans at the All-Star break and what's going on with that franchise. Will, what's going on, brother?
I'm doing well, man. How about you?
I am doing fantastic. Mind you, I feel like the Pelicans franchise, as Alvin Gentry put it on Thursday, is a dumpster fire, especially with the firing of Dell Demps on Friday afternoon. Were you surprised at the announcement coming on a Friday afternoon, like about 10:57?
I don't think anybody was surprised the news came out that they were going to move on eventually, just because we all kind of saw this coming after the Anthony Davis trade request came out. But I think the timing was a little surprising to do it, you know, right before the All-Star break, after the trade deadline. I figured that the move would come maybe sometime during the summer. But I think it's pretty obvious that ownership was just unhappy about just the way it's kind of turned, like you said, into this dumpster fire, into this big circus where every single night, who knows what's going to be the new drama going on with the Pelicans, because Anthony Davis leaving the arena, what did Alvin Gentry say? And I think ownership kind of looked at the situation and felt like it was just getting away from Dell Demps and he was losing control, so they wanted to make a move. And I think this allows them to kind of start the process of searching for the next guy a little bit earlier than anybody else.
Yeah, it seems like everybody is losing control right now. And, of course, Del Temp's fired. But now we got Danny Ferry. He's the interim general manager for the Pelicans. What can you say about Danny Ferry and what he can wind up doing in this interim role to try and keep this going forward? Or do you think it's just that he's a holding place and you're rearranging ships on the Titanic to where you're going to wind up having a whole other group of people that are going to be in place for the 2019-2020 season in terms of the entire front office? Because it feels like we're at that point now where we can wind up having a whole new regime in place in New Orleans.
Yeah, with Danny, I mean, he's a guy that's been with the team for the past few years as a consultant. He has some relationships around the team. He's not a guy that necessarily was around every single day. From my understanding, he would be around maybe, you know, 5 or 6 days out of the month, just kind of around, you know, giving his thoughts, kind of giving his perspective on things. And I think for a lot of people in the organization, the news coming out about Del Demps yesterday was surprising to them. And I think for Danny as well. And I think it's probably going to take him some time to figure out what his role is going to be, how much they're going to ask him to do. And I think, you know, from what I know, he will be one of the people that the team's considered for taking that job on full-time after this season. And I think it's still very early in the process for him. I think he's still trying to figure out what he wants to do, if he'd like to really throw his name into that ring. But I think he's a quality guy to have in the building, somebody with general manager experience, somebody who knows how to run their organization. And I think that's really important for this team. Like we said, just to have someone to deal with this circus. I mean, even beyond just the day-to-day roster construction and making sure the training staff and everyone's in place, just somebody to deal with the media that's constantly going to be around this team as long as Anthony Davis is here. I think that's important, and that's something that he's going to have to manage. And I think dealing with all that other stuff is something he'll figure out at a later date.
Talk right now with Will Guillory of The Athletic right now on the Arco Equipment Hotline. And Anthony Davis, he's recently put out some stuff about, he's on NBA TV and said all the other 29 teams are on his list. And, you know, that's interesting. He's talking about this, says he does not have a preferred destination. You buying that?
I am not buying it, to be honest. I think that was probably a little bit of a PR spin, just because I think he accidentally let it slip out that he would consider Boston, where previously his representation had said that he wouldn't consider Boston. So I think that might have been a little bit of damage control. I do think AD is the type of guy where he's open-minded. I think anywhere he would get traded, he would kind of come in with the willingness to kind of see how things are going, what the direction of the franchise is. But I think his representation, Rich Paul, Clutch Sports, they've made it pretty obvious that they'd like him to go to the Lakers, the Knicks, the Clippers, or the Bucks. And I think that's the list that they put out there. That's the list that they've shared with the Pelicans. And I don't really see him having an openness to signing anywhere other than those teams, and probably with the underline under the Los Angeles Lakers, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the biggest thing, is that I feel like it's either going to be – to me, it's either going to be the Celtics or the Knicks. It just depends on how things kind of fall out. When you look at the draft lottery right now, you could say the Knicks are probably going to be the team that gets the number one pick. But if you believe some of the conspiracy theories out there, it could very well be the Cleveland Cavaliers getting that first pick in the 2019 NBA draft. I think that's going to be a big bargaining chip when it comes to trying to get the services of Anthony Davis.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Knicks, their main way to get into this discussion, I think, is by getting either that number one or that number two pick, just because it's something that the Pelicans, because I think from the Pelicans' perspective, from my understanding is a big reason why they didn't want to do the Los Angeles Lakers trade is because it felt like none of the guys the Lakers were offering really had that all-star potential, and I think they would like to get a young guy back that they can kind of put in front of the fans and say, okay, we lost Anthony Davis, but this guy is going to be our future all-star. And I think that's why Jason Tatum is a guy that they're so intrigued by, and I think Zion Williamson obviously is a guy that you bring him in into New Orleans, and you can immediately sell him to the fan base as the future of the franchise, the guy that we could build around going forward now that AD is gone. And I think it'll be really interesting to see if the Knicks win first, how the entire NBA reacts. Because I think a lot of the conspiracy theories you mentioned are going to come out if the Knicks win, because a lot of people are going to say, wow, the NBA wants to make the Knicks relevant again. And the other part of this is, are the Knicks going to be willing to part with that pick? Are they going to say, we will just take Zion, we'll just put him in the garden, and we'll make him the star of this team? So
I think there's going to be a lot of moving parts. Personally, I would say the Celtics are still my favorite at this point, just because that Jason Tatum piece, I know so many people around the league are intrigued by him, and he's the guy that the Pelicans would love to bring in. But the Knicks, they're going to be the wild card here. If they can win that lottery, then they're going to shake up a lot of things.
You brought up Jason Tatum just now, and it got me to an interesting talking point we had earlier in the show about if he's the piece. We talk about how there's always these key pieces you want to kind of build your franchise around and be that star. Is Jason Tatum one of those 10 to 12 pieces in the NBA that can be the piece to make this team an immediate contender? Or is he a guy that you need one or two more guys to put around him and he can become an elite player?
Immediate contender, I wouldn't be so fast to say that, just because I think he's so young. You know, he's still so early in his career. I think the one thing he does bring in, he's just a guy that could be a number one on a legit playoff team. And I think we get into this conversation a lot in the NBA about, can this guy lead you to a championship? And I think the Warriors have just kind of thrown all of that off, because I don't think you can really – any one guy can make you a championship contender as long as the Warriors are around. You need like eight different guys to beat the Warriors. But I think with a guy like Jason Tatum, he can be a number one on a team that can consistently make the playoffs. And I see that potential in him, and I'm extremely high on him. I think the guy is going to be a star in this league, and I think he's going to be an elite scorer one day. He just needs to be in a situation where he's the number one guy, and I think something that's being frustrating for him is playing behind Kyrie Irving in Boston. And I think that's kind of put a ceiling on what he can do. And I think coming to New Orleans, it'll open up an opportunity for him to really blossom and show every facet of his game. And I think you'll really see him show a lot of the greatness that's within him. But I think as of right now, he's kind of playing his role in Boston, and I think they want to win, and they're trying to figure that thing out. But I think if they do end up sending him to New Orleans, I think he's a guy that can give you, once he reaches his prime, he could be a 25-plus a night kind of guy. And I think that's the kind of guy that the Pelicans need to kind of bring them back to relevance after this whole circus.
Talk right now with Will Guillory. And my big question we have up on Twitter, our big poll question, is about do the Pelicans leave New Orleans in the next 5 years? And that's what I'm going to pose to you. Do you see that happening?
I do not. I think Gail Benson is committed to the team. Just from people I've talked to, I think she made it pretty obvious in some of the statements she made after the Dell Demps firing that she wants to let people know that she's in charge, that she's going to be running this search, and that she wants to turn this team into a winner. And she's not looking at this Anthony Davis situation as a death nail to this team. I think she figures this is an opportunity for them to turn that asset into something that can really build a foundation for this team. And I think that's the way that they're approaching this. And I think a lot of the people that are throwing out the idea of her selling the team aren't aware of how committed she is to making this thing work as being an owner of two teams. I think it's something she's really proud of. And I think it's something she really wants to carry on the legacy of Tom Benson of making sports in New Orleans work. And I know that's something that he was really passionate about. Obviously, it started with his ownership of the Saints and leading that franchise to a Super Bowl. And I think they want to have that same type of success with the Pelicans. It's just a matter of putting a basketball operations in place that can make that happen. And I think we all know that the way things were working with Dell Demps, it just was never going to work with him as the guy in charge. So I think it's a really important step for this team is getting that right person to be the lead executive in the front office to kind of put this thing back on the right track. And that'll go a long way in kind of deading a lot of those rumors about the team leaving the city.
Well, thanks so much for coming on, man. We'll talk to you down the road.
Hey, man, I appreciate you for having me on.
All right, that was Will Guillory. You can follow him on Twitter at Will Guillory. All one word, no underscores, no nothing. So we're going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break. Be back with more. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.
You've heard the host takes all week. Saturday mornings are for the producers. Now back to Blaine, Clint, and Cody. The world of college basketball is a battlefield filled with potential landmines as we get to the month of March. Thank goodness we have Greg Peterson embracing all of the madness with the producers.
And welcome back to the producers. What a great weekend of college basketball we've got on tap. And to break it all down, we got to get to our guy, Greg Peterson, our college basketball expert and our bracketologist as well. I'm sure I'll get him
to break some of that down with us as well. Greg, what is going on, my good brother?
Not too much, doing a little bit better than the offenses in this Auburn versus Vanderbilt game right now.
Yeah, a little less than ideal. Then again, you could say the same thing about the Maryland-Michigan game, which we're watching right now inside the 237 Roof Studios, 23-10 late in the first half of that ball game. Definitely a little bit less than lackluster games so far in the early slate.
Oh, certainly. I expected a little bit more out of Maryland, which you mentioned. Not surprised that Vanderbilt is hanging with Auburn because the Tigers, I just don't know what's happened to this team. They're unable to play away from home, and even at home, they lose that game to Ole Miss a couple days ago, so things aren't going well for Auburn.
No, they are not. It's not a good look for them to start off the weekend. But we got to look at last night's game. You had St. John upset number 8 Marquette. How about that? You see a big upset. I think it was St. John's first win against top 25 team in like 8 years. That's impressive.
It was. And then they come back the next game, and they lose to Providence at home by 14 points. Just goes to show how wacky college basketball is. We saw that Duke versus Louisville game. Louisville blows a 23-point lead in under 10 minutes. So we've seen some very insane things. And I will say this. In this year in college basketball, I feel like we've had the most ridiculous comebacks ever. Actually, you can take a look at a game a little bit more off the beaten path. Southern Utah a couple of weeks ago was up 28 points with about 12 minutes to go against Sacramento State. Very nearly blew that lead.
I mean, you'd think everybody would learn no lead is safe. I mean, we saw what happened in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago with the Atlanta Falcons.
Oh, exactly. 28-3. The 25-point lead, the most unsafe lead in all sports, I guess you could say.
It really is. It's one of the most unsafe things. One of the safe things to say is that you're a big college basketball expert, and we got to talk about it. I know last week they kind of broke down a top 16 seeds in the NCAA tournament if the tournament started today. So let me kind of break it down for you and give me your top 16 in your mind, top 16 national seeds. Where are you going with this?
For the one seed, I have to go with Gonzaga and Duke in Tennessee, obviously. Those are the three teams that I feel like right now are the best in the country. But then from there, I don't necessarily have this in front of me because I haven't been doing as much bracketology. I've been really doing more individual game betting. But if you're taking a look at it for a number 4 team in the country, it's really one that you can go a variety of different ways because you've got a lot of teams playing well right now. I would right now give that to Virginia for my last number 1 seed. And then when you get from the 2 seeds, it gets a little bit messier from there because I think that Michigan, you certainly have to have in the fold in there for a 2 seed at this point. Do you maybe bring up a team like a North Carolina that's looking very impressive against Wake Forest? Might be a little bit too much praise because they did lose against Virginia, so they probably are going to fall to a 3 seed at this point. But then you've got so many other teams that have emerged as good teams. Purdue probably falls to a 4 seed. We saw them as a 3 seed in the NCAA selection a few weeks ago. Houston, I was rated as a 3 seed, so I have to go there for right now, even though I think they're a little bit more worthy of a 4 seed myself. So you've got a big, giant jumble mess after those top 4 seeds because right now what we've noticed, there's about 4 or 5 teams that have separated themselves from everyone else because let's take a look at it. The big difference between someone that's, say, like in the top 15 in the country, like Purdue, versus a team that's maybe just outside the top 25, like an Ole Miss or an Auburn, probably as slim as it ever has been.
And I have to agree with you. Talking right now with Greg Peterson, our college basketball expert, and we got to talk about it. Tuesday night, LSU at the buzzer beats Kentucky. And where does that put them in your bracket right now? I know I'm seeing a lot of them out there saying they're a 4 seed. Is that kind of where you're at as well?
I think LSU is a 3 seed at this point. I love the way the Tigers are playing. That win on the road against Kentucky at Rupp, how many teams do that? I mean, seriously, this is a team that is playing so well right now. They've won 13 out of their last 14 games in that stretch. Draymond Waters having less than a turnover more per game than he did at the beginning of the year. He was averaging 4.4 turnovers in the team's first 10 games of the year. He's now averaging right around 3.3, shooting over 38% from three, and he's one of the top 5 players in the country in regards to steals per game. You pair him up with Kyler Mays. Mays is a guy that is in the top 50 in the country in regards to steals, and then this front line is able to match up with anyone. You've got Nas Reed, Emmett Williams, Cafel Bigby-Williams, Darius Days. These are all guys that do a great job down low. And they're getting some good 3-point shooting as well. LSU, so dangerous. And they're going to just run all over a Georgia team that they were able to knock out by double digits a few weeks ago.
Is that three seed maybe the ceiling for LSU, or you think they could even creep up even higher?
If they continue to win, I mean, this is a team that I believe has one loss in ICC play against Arkansas. This could be a two seed by the time it's all said and done. This is a team that only has four losses for the year, if I remember correctly. One of those was against Houston, one of the worst officiated games you're ever going to find. And then one of the other losses as well was to Florida State. That's a game that they legitimately should have won. They were up in that game like 8 points with a minute to a minute and a half to go. Florida State in overtime gets one of the luckiest bounces to go on a three to be able to win that game. This is an LSU squad that all in all has played good basketball all year long. It's really rounding into form.
Hey, Greg, we got to kind of hop over to some of the – you talk about some of the individual betting you've been doing as of late. We got to talk about some of these ball games that are going to be on tap later on today. And I think one of the more marquee ones has to be Iowa State, Kansas State. Tip-off is going to be at 3 o'clock. Kansas State currently a 2.5-point favorite. Where are you leaning on this one? Because it feels tough.
It is a little bit of a tough one. Barry Brown Jr. was able to steal that last game for Kansas State. They were down 7 points in the final minute of that game. They pull it out. Got to think revenge is going to be on the mind for Iowa State. They're led by a point guard in Therese Halliburton, giving this team 7.5 points, 4.5 rebounds, shoots 42% from three, generates 2 steals per game, one of the most unheralded point guards in the country. You've got guys like Wigginton that are able to come off the bench and give the team production. And then you've got Michael Jacobson, 6'9", versatile big man, shooting over 40% from three. He's going to be able to match up with Dean Wade. You got to like the way that Kamal Stokes has been running the backcourt for Kansas State. And then you do have Xavier Cede, a 6'7" player that's able to shoot from three. And this Kansas State team in general has been much better on offense recently than they were at the beginning of the year. At the beginning of the year, this was a team that at one point was in like the 263 spot in regards to offensive efficiency. They've been much better in recent games. So I certainly do think that this is a game that is going to be played in like the high 60s, low 70s. But I think that Iowa State gets their revenge and gets the outright win.
I'd have to agree with you. I think that's going to be a fun one to keep an eye on. And now we got to hop over to some other top 25 matchups of note. Virginia Tech and Pittsburgh. Surprisingly, VT's is a 6-point favorite. I thought it would have been a little bit more against a team that is currently 12-13 on the year.
Pittsburgh is 12-13, but they played a lot of teams tough so far this year. They've got some good defense, and Xavier Johnson in the backcourt for this team, averaging 16 points per game, shoots over 40% from three. And we've seen Virginia Tech not play their best basketball because they've been without Justin Robinson as of late. I don't think he's going to be able to go in this one. Guy that pours in 14.5 points per game. We've seen him have some 30-plus point outbursts. Is the team's leader in assists. That means that Nikhil Walker-Alexander is going to have to do more out there in the backcourt for Virginia Tech. He's a guy that's averaging 17 points per game. So I like what he's able to do. Ty Elba is going to see more minutes as well. Ty Elba is a guy that shoots 40% from three as well. I think the big X factor, though, is the fact that down low, Kerry Blackshear has been pulling in 7 to 8 rebounds per game recently in an ECC play for Virginia Tech. For the year, he's only pulling in about 6.5, so he's done a better job down low. I don't think that Pittsburgh really has a size matchup with him, so I wanted to play in the points here with Virginia Tech, though, that Justin Robinson injury is something to note.
Talk right now with Greg Peterson, our college basketball expert. And now we got to talk about LSU once again because they got a good game coming up today against Georgia. LSU currently an 8-point favorite on the road against a team that feels like it's just after Tom Crean's kind of dressing down of the team in front of the media, it feels like what we're talking about with Georgia, it's a mess right now.
Oh, it is. Georgia's leader in assists right now, Nicholas Claxton with 2.1. He and Rayshon Hammond down low doing a nice job, but this backcourt with Trumpet Company, man, they are lost out there in the wilderness. Willie Jackson is a guy that I expected a whole heck of a lot more out of. Georgia's a team that they go up-tempo, but they don't have a good backcourt to be able to go up-tempo, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever, and has caused for a disastrous season. Meanwhile, for LSU, you have the front court that I mentioned earlier. You've got the good guards as well. Georgia team, not necessarily good at being able to take care of the ball. I think that this is going to be a complete rout. I see LSU winning this game by double-digit points. I don't know how Georgia hangs in this one. The only reason why Georgia covered the first game that these two teams played is because the line was right around 12 points in that game. LSU had their one of the players, I forget exactly who it was, going for a highlight reel dunk in the closing seconds, missed it. That allowed Georgia to be able to get a garbage bucket at the end. Many bettors were very salty about that one. Don't think that's going to be the case in this game.
I'd have to agree with you, Greg. But, and now we got to hop over to some some local stuff as well with the Louisiana Raging Cajuns, UL Monroe. It's a UL's a 1-point favorite at the moment. It's going to be at the Cajun Dome tonight. But I did see you put out a little over-under about this, and you actually took the over 162, and that seems strange to me because it feels like the Cajun team hasn't been like a high-scoring, high-octane offense as they had been in the past.
The Raging Cajuns, in 8 of their last 9 games, the total has went over 165. This is a Cajun team that is playing no defense whatsoever, but we both know this. They looked a little bit better in their most recent game last Friday, but that's that. Louisiana Lafayette, they're giving up 80 points left and right. Louisiana Monroe, the last time these two teams played, they both got to 90. I don't see how either team doesn't get you over 80 points in this game because Louisiana Monroe, one of the better three-point shooting teams out there in the country, Deshaun Smith, averaging 22 points per game. He shoots over 40% from three. Travis Munnings, a 6'6" player that does a good job of being able to give this team some rebounding with right around 7 per game. He's also able to step out and shoot threes. And for the Raging Cajuns, Jakeenan Gant has had some just absolutely monstrous performances out there in Sun Belt play. Marcus Stroman is a guy that has really upped his scoring production from last year. But question is, what are the Raging Cajuns going to be able to get there in the backcourt with the guys surrounding Stroman? This year it just hasn't been a lot. I have a little bit more faith in Louisiana Monroe and their backcourt, especially with Smith playing the way that they did. So I think this is a game that I could see Louisiana Monroe winning like 90 to 85. There just isn't much defense being played by Louisiana Lafayette yet.
All right, last one before I let you go, and it's all about Tennessee-Kentucky, probably the biggest game of the week. And I have to say, it's going to be a fun one. Number one, Tennessee. Number four, Kentucky. The Wildcats, number five, excuse me, Kentucky. They probably dropped down on the rankings list. They beat Tennessee, and the Wildcats currently a 4-point favorite. What do you say about this matchup? Who you got?
It's very rare that you see the number one team in the country and a 4-point underdog, and I'm going to take the points here with Tennessee. Grant Williams, a guy that was the SEC Player of the Year last year, is getting to the free throw line at will. We all remember the 21-for-21 free throw shooting performance that he had against Vanderbilt. He did sensational work there. You've got Bowden out there in the backcourt to go with Jordan Bone. Jordan Bone, this is a turnover ratio of 3. Does a great job for this team. Kyle Alexander is going to be able to match up down low with the front court of Reed Travis and P.J. Washington. Ashton Higgins, one of the best perimeter defenders out there in the country for Kentucky. He only pours in 10 points per game, but he's generating 3 steals per game in this 12-2 run that Kentucky has been on. So he's been doing sensational in that regard. But I do think that the X factor in this game, Admiral Schofield, he's strong. He's able to shoot threes. He does everything for Tennessee. I don't know if Tennessee is going to win this game or not. I think it's a total toss-up. So for that reason, I default to the points.
Greg, thanks so much for coming on, my man. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
All right, that was Greg Peterson. You can follow him on Twitter at GUnit_81. And the reason why I said I'll talk to you in a couple weeks is because I think we'll be preempted due to LSU Tiger basketball next week with the LSU-Tennessee game. That's going to be a huge one.
It's actually 2 weeks in a row. It looks like LSU's going to have an 11 o'clock basketball game. So
yeah,
we might be knocked off 2 weeks in a row. But look.
Right at the peak of Mardi Gras season.
Yeah, kind of. It's convenient. But
hey, yeah, I know,
Peters,
right?
Is the best, man. He picks so many games each and every day on Twitter. If you're into that sort of thing, if you're a degenerate
gambler
like Clint, go ahead and follow that guy. He goes ahead and picks almost every basketball game every night.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, probably once this thing gets legalized, I might have him on more often during football season and whatnot, too. Because I know he definitely does that as well. Going to go take a quick commercial break. Be back with more. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Listening to 103.7 The Game on your Amazon Echo is easy. Just enable the Alexa skill for 103.7 The Game.
Quiet on the set. Can we please have quiet on the set?
Let's get back to the must-listen-to Saturday morning sports show, The Producers, with Blaine, Clint, and Cody on 103.7 The Game.
Let's begin now.
Welcome back to The Producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Wrapping up this show in style. It's going to be a really good day. Well, you got our buddy Cody getting married today, so we're not going to have him on for some pick-ems because, well, why not? Probably not next week either, because he may be on the way back from Gatlinburg. I don't know how long the honeymoon is.
He might be in no condition to come on the show next week, you know? I'm very excited for our boy Cody, though, man. He seems
disappointed you're not going.
Fired up about it. Happy for him.
I thought you would have gone.
I have a prior engagement tonight that
yeah.
I won't be able to make it.
I know. I know. That's why I said the peak of Mardi Gras season, because, well, I know you've got that going on.
Yeah, I'll be Mardi Gras balling tonight. So.
Yeah, that's nice. And then
looking
next,
all dapper in a tux and whatnot.
Then for the next 2 weeks, we're going to be preempt. And I know next Saturday may be the best case scenario.
Next Saturday's Karen Crow Mardi Gras. So.
And you know how ridiculous it is to kind of just try and get here, period, to the 237 Roof Studios?
Yeah.
We're right in the middle of the damn parade route.
So it'll... Yeah, I'll be next week, I'll be having a large time.
Yeah, you'll be having a very large time, and probably with some large fellows. Namely, somebody's pumped with a pulse.
Super heavyweight.
I saw him last night, man. He seemed
yeah, he was fired up to get to the Teague last night. He's all excited.
Yeah, let's get to some pickups, man, because we were running short on time here. Went a little long with Greg Peterson, but it's no problem. Let's get things started right now. Of course, we talked about a Tennessee-Kentucky. How can we not bring that one up to start things off? Start off with a fire matchup between these two.
I'm going to take Tennessee. I just think this is not one of Kentucky's better teams. Tennessee's been playing well all season long. They're just much more consistent for me. So I'm going to take the Vols.
And I probably would gladly take that one as well. I'll take Kentucky on that one. Next up, I think we got to bring it up, LSU-Georgia. LSU looking dominant at this point, 20-4, and Tom Crean's Georgia Bulldogs, he doesn't want them on the team anymore, so I'll go with LSU on this one.
Yeah, I'm going to take LSU by a bunch tonight. I just think that their confidence after that big win in Rupp Arena is sky high. They're looking forward to postseason basketball in Baton Rouge. I think they're going to roll the Bulldogs today.
Exactly. And, you know, we're going to move over to the baseball diamond, kind of looking at some of the matchups around the country, but we got to talk about Army LSU.
Man, Army returns a whole lot of players. They were dominant yesterday against Air Force, but LSU's going to be a different beast today. We finally get to see Landon Marceau in live person today and see what he has to bring for the Tigers. Whole lot of preseason recognition, and I think the Tigers get it done today. And maybe the bats won't be as hot, but the pitching will be better on the mound.
I'd have to agree with you. I think the bats aren't going to be as hot, but it's going to be a damn good game nonetheless. And it's All-Star Weekend, so why not go the route of Team LeBron, Team Giannis Antetokounmpo? Who you got?
I'm taking King James and Team LeBron to get it done. I don't know how much defense is going to be played in this game.
Wait, there's defense?
What's the over-under?
I have no idea, to be honest with you. I was trying to see it right now, but surprisingly, the Four Letter Networks app does not have that.
Wow!
You would think like they'd have, and like they have all the spreads for these games.
312.
Like, 312, really?
Yeah.
I'll take the under on that.
I'm gonna take the over.
Okay. Let's see. That's four. Let's go with one more, and let's go WWE Elimination Chamber coming up this Sunday. And let's go with one of the Elimination Chamber matches. That's gonna be for the WWE Championship, Daniel Bryan, Kofi Kingston, Jeff Hardy, Samoa Joe, Randy Orton, who's going to be the last entrant in this one. Let's see. And I'm trying to remember who else is in it now.
I'm taking the beard in Daniel Bryan. It's time
with his 100% hemp belt.
I want him to be back in the forefront in the WWE.
Well, he's the WWE champion at the moment.
Well, he just doesn't have that pop that he wants to have.
He's got the... Yeah, well, I mean, he's a heel. He's the new Daniel Bryan. How can you not love his story and what he's been able to do? I got to go with Daniel Bryan as well. He's taking it to WrestleMania. And boy, Elimination Chamber is going to be fun. But Monday Night Raw the night after is going to be even more fun.
Clint D's going to be live.
At the Cajun Dome.
You'll be live tweeting for us so we can follow you?
I might be. I might not be. You know, we should hypothetically do like a live Periscope for the 20 by 20 Progress podcast Twitter account and do a whole live reaction video from the Cajun Dome.
WWE Raw is coming to the Cajun Dome,
yeah.
And Cody Schutz is going to be in Gatlinburg.
Oh, yeah, I keep forgetting.
Poor guy.
Yeah, he's going to be in Gatlinburg, but I'm sure he's going to be watching
it. Not really.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't feel sorry for the guy. The guy's getting married. He's going to be having all kinds of fun on his wedding night and every night thereafter. Definitely going to have a lot of fun from that aspect. But have a great rest of your Saturday, everybody. We are done. It's going to be a great one. Make it a great one because all kinds of cool stuff. LSU basketball, LSU baseball, Cajuns baseball. And if you're going to a wedding or Mardi Gras ball, what have you, it's a wonderful time of year.
See you guys in a couple weeks.
Yeah, exactly. We'll probably be out for the next 2 weeks. Not due to injury, not due to cancellation, but because, well, LSU basketball takes precedence. We out.
Show it on.
Oh, yeah. Kick it.